You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey everybody, it's Dan. Before we get to our podcast, as always, let me tell you about Football Insider, because you should be checking out Football Insider. You get access to all those exclusive stories that you find on cleveland.com/browns, but there's more to it than just that. You get a newsletter in your inbox every day, and it's got something exclusive that our Browns beat team writes that doesn't go anywhere on the website. It only goes in the newsletter delivered directly to you, and you have an opportunity to get involved in our texting subscription service, which includes texts from Mary Kay, Scott, Ellis, and me throughout the day on the latest Browns news analysis. We do pregame chats postgame. That's what I was going to get to. We have a postgame show for our text subscribers. And also we have a texter on every week to pick games. So Football Insider, a lot of opportunities to be involved in the podcast, interact with all of us. You should check it out. Go to cleveland.com/browns. Click on the blue banner at the top of the page. Now here's our podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to our Wednesday edition of the Orange and Brown podcast. I am Dan Lobby, joined by Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, how are you?
I'm doing really well today, Dan. How you doing?
Doing well, and also joined by Scott Patsko. Scott, how are you?
Doing good. I feel like I've been doing podcasts all day here today. One after another. Let's go.
I was going to say, you're in the Ellis Williams role from last week when we had him on right after the Got to Watch to the Tape was recorded. So we're keeping you guys busy. I put out a call for our Football Insider subscribers and who are also getting our texts, of course. That's part of the package. You want to check that out, sign up for it. I put out a call out to see what questions they had about the Browns today. Now, before we get to that, I want to let everybody know that we'll have Terry Pluto in the second half of the pod. But before we get to Terry, let's answer some questions from our Football Insider subscribers. And look, I knew this was going to be a topic. I think we all kind of knew this was going to be a topic when Odell Beckham got hurt. This question about Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham, and you know, there's some longer ways people have asked this, but here's the most efficient way from the 330 area code. Is losing Odell Beckham possibly less stress for Baker Mayfield in some ways? Another way to ask that is it ultimately maybe better for Baker Mayfield to not have Odell Beckham out there? I think it's maybe a complicated answer. Because just my initial answer is just no, because Odell is Odell. But there are probably some areas where, you know, if Baker doesn't have to focus on getting the ball to Odell, it could be beneficial. What do you think, Mary Kay?
You know what? It is a very, very complicated answer. I have never really thought that Baker and Odell had any real good chemistry together. And therefore, you know, in some ways, I do think that maybe Baker Mayfield might function a little better without Odell, you know, being someone that he feels that he has to get the ball to, or, you know, that has to always be his first read or whatever. But having said that, I just need to make it perfectly clear. I think that Odell Beckham Jr. has Hall of Fame talent. I have been mystified as to why these two guys really don't have the chemistry that you would think two talented football players like that should have. So this is not us in saying that, it's not in any way, shape or form a knock against Odell. After the opener, I wrote that, you know, I just wondered if Baker was going to be the guy here, should they consider maybe trading Odell? Because I just wasn't sure it was ever going to come together between those two guys. And I still sort of feel that way at times.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to be clear off the top, the Browns are worse off without Odell Beckham Jr. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've ever really got a clear sense of how it was supposed to look with him and Landry on the field together, like how that dynamic was supposed to work, how the catches were supposed to work. It never really became clear. And there were too many situations where it was obvious they were trying to get the ball to Odell. I mean, in week one, at the end of the first half, they threw a bubble screen, a play that Kevin Stefanski never calls because they wanted to get the ball to Odell because he didn't have a target at that point. So you don't have that anymore. And maybe in some way, having a clear, maybe more set, all right, this is your number one guy, this is number two, and so on. Maybe that's easier for Baker. I don't know. But the Browns are worse off without Odell. However, if your offense, and I said this about losing Nick Chubb, if your offense can't function, if it can only function with Odell and Jarvis, then you got a problem. Like, you should be able to be okay with maybe just one of those guys. You shouldn't need two Pro Bowl talent wide receivers for your offense to work. So it's the same way with Chubb and Hunt. You know, even without Nick Chubb, your offense just still work.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a clear black and white answer for a lot of the reasons that you both mentioned. I think there's going to be a point this season where you're going to miss Odell Beckham, where you just don't have that guy who can take a handoff against Dallas and turn what should have been a catastrophic loss into a 50-yard touchdown run. You don't have that. Now, you know, you're going to get a guy like Nick Chubb back. We know his big playability. You know, you hope Kareem Hunt starts to get healthier and healthier too. We know what he can do. Jarvis, you know, we know what he's able to do as well. But Odell just brings a different dynamic, I think, than all of those guys. Even Chubb, who we know when Chubb gets into the second level, it could turn into an 80 or 90 yard run. But Odell just brings this different dynamic. And I'm curious to see how defensive coordinators approach this until, you know, either the Browns find somebody to be that deep threat or Donovan Peoples-Jones steps up to be that deep threat, however they do it. I'm curious to see how defensive coordinators kind of adjust as the Browns run this play action heavy offense. And you know, if they maybe sneak some guys up, if they don't have to respect the deep ball as much, that's really, I guess, what I'm watching.
Well, you have to game plan for Odell Beckham Jr. And a defensive coordinator has got to figure out how to double team him or do whatever, roll coverage to him, do whatever it takes. He can take the top off of a defense. He can do so many different things. So I'm sure defensive coordinators would say, oh my goodness, there no way are they possibly any better without Odell Beckham Jr. And it does sound preposterous, but it just really kind of, you know, comes down to the fact that, look, he only had 23 catches. Now, he did so many other things and got things so open for other guys and, you know, blocked well downfield and all of that kind of stuff. But the fact that there just wasn't the magic that we all thought there would be between Baker and Odell, you know, I still sometimes wonder going forward, does it make sense to have these guys together anymore?
Okay, let's get to some more questions here. There's two that kind of go hand in hand. So I'll start with this one from the 440 area code. When you look at the Browns defense, the question is, what position on defense is the Browns' greatest need and how do they fill it? There's probably two pretty obvious candidates here, but I'll let you guys answer this one before I do. What do you consider the Browns' biggest defensive need, and is it something that they can fill either at the trade deadline or maybe on the roster already?
Scott, you go.
Wow, this is a toss-up. I would say a linebacker who is solid in coverage. That's something they really don't have. Malcolm Smith's trying to fill that role, and he's better than anyone else they got available at the moment, but they clearly need to upgrade that. And the other spot would be, I guess it depends on how you want to use Ronnie Harris, and you can just say free safety or strong safety because he's played both, but basically the safety spot other than Ronnie Harrison. Those are two big needs. And, you know, who would fill maybe both those roles is Grant Delpit, but he's not here. So maybe they kind of do have it filled. He's just not, you know, able to play this year. But those, I think, are the two, I think, glaring things this team needs to address.
You know, one of the things that I have been thinking about, and I wrote a little bit about it for this morning or later last night, was the fact that, you know, nobody else on this team besides Myles Garrett, nobody has more than 2.5 sacks. Sheldon Richardson has 2.5, and Adrian Claiborne has 2. Olivier Vernon has none, and Larry Ogunjobi has none. And I think that's one of the most surprising things to me about that defensive front this season. I did think that Olivier Vernon was going to be more productive in the pass rush in the sack department. I really thought so. And, you know, we've seen in the past, Larry Ogunjobi, you know, he gets a nice push up the middle. And now they've had some injuries. These guys have been in and out of the lineup with injuries, and that has hurt them. Adrian Claiborne has been hurt this season. So they've been pretty banged up. Maybe it will change when they come off the bye. But to this point, you know, I think been one of the most disappointing things is the lack of a pass rush besides Miles. And it puts a lot of pressure on Miles. And, you know, I would say that, you know, it's hard. I mean, like, you can't go out trading for Yannick Ngakoue now. That's too late. The Baltimore Ravens already did that. There's not a bunch of pass rushers sitting around, but they have to find a way to get to the quarterback other than Myles Garrett.
Okay, so that brings up kind of a two-part question then off of that, though. The one I was originally going to ask is, you know, can they scheme this up, right? Or is it just sort of, are we just to the point where the scheme is what it is and maybe you just don't have the talent level yet as far as whether it's the pass rush or the issues in the secondary, you know, things like that. And then the other piece of this is, do we think they will make a trade before the deadline? You know, I'll answer the second part of that. I feel like, first of all, they kind of made their trade already, and that was back when they traded a fifth rounder for Ronnie Harrison. And I'm sure they're going to look, and I'm sure they're going to try and add somebody, but I also don't think this team is in the market to make a, you know, Super Bowl or bust type trade right now. And Everson Griffin, before we came on, was just traded to the Lions. So, you know, I think they'll look. I don't know if they'll do anything. I think they like having those draft assets, honestly. And as far as the scheme is concerned, I really just kind of feel like this team is sort of, they are who they are at this point. I mean, Joe Woods can cook some things up, but the reality is this defense is probably still an offseason away from being exactly what they want it to be from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, I agree that Ronnie Harrison and Malcolm Smith are like, those are the two trades that are the two acquisitions that have happened, you know? And if they, I mean, they're flying with those guys. They finally got Ronnie Harrison on the field. So that's what they're going with.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with that. You know, I could see them adding a couple of, you know, guys that, you know, we may not have really heard of. I don't see them going out and renting an Anthony Harris from the Vikings for the last 9 games of the season. I don't see anything like that happening. They're not going to give up draft picks and good compensation for a player that is what amounts to, again, a 9-game rental. Not happening. Now, if they can acquire someone or something that can help them down the stretch, fill a need, fill a hole, and not have to give up too much for that person, maybe even swap a player or whatever, then they'll do something like that. So I see, you know, maybe they'll even try to find a receiver. But again, it's not going to be probably a big name guy, probably not going to be somebody that we've ever, you know, really heard that much about. It would probably be somebody that can play a role and fill a need. So not expecting too much. I think more so what they're hoping is that the guys that they have right now are going to get a lot healthier. They're still waiting for Harrison. Well, you know, Harrison's coming back and getting better. Mac Wilson. Again, I mentioned Olivier Vernon, and I mentioned this yesterday. I don't see him going through the bags with the same intensity that he did during training camp. I think he still is being a little bugged by the abdominal injury. So I think that's what they're hoping for, get their guys healthier.
I think the trades they would make would be one very similar to the Ronnie Harrison deal, right? Mm-hmm. Something, a low draft pick for a guy that they control for a little while. You can find out who he is. He's young. And again, the ceiling on that pick is, you know, maybe next year they're rolling with Ronnie Harrison and Grant Delpit at safety. That's pretty good for a fifth round draft pick to Jacksonville. So I think those are the sorts of trades that you would be looking at. All right, this is a fun one. From the 405 area code, who has more catches the rest of the season? And I suppose you guys can add a name to this, but here are the options that this person gave us. Austin Hooper, Harrison Bryant, Jarvis Landry, Rashard Higgins. So Austin Hooper, Harrison Bryant, Jarvis Landry, Rashard Higgins. Who has more catches over the last 9 games, do we think? These are some good options.
I mean, it's got to be Jarvis, right? I mean,
you would think.
If you take Jarvis out of that, then I think it's a better it's a better question. But I would think Jarvis Landry is going to lead this team in catches this year.
That was going to be my first instinct too. I think that once again, Jarvis has been suffering with what I believe is actually 2 ribs that are impacted by, you know, broken, crack, whatever. So he is suffering from this very painful rib injury. But I do think that he will get more of the catches as they get the passing game cranked up and as he gets feeling a little healthier.
Okay, so let's take Jarvis out of the equation. These are the next 4. So Jarvis has the most receptions on the team. Then it's Odell. These are the next 4 right now. Austin Hooper, Kareem Hunt, Harrison Bryant, and Rashard Higgins. So it's basically the same group, except we're replacing Jarvis with Kareem Hunt. Who do we think gets more receptions out of that group? I think I will go. I didn't actually answer the last one. I would have said Landry too. I think I might go. Part of me really wants to say Rashard Higgins just because of that connection. But I'm having trouble with this one.
This is a tough one.
Hooper, I don't know if Hooper's going to be healthy. I think it could be Hunt or Bryant. And I think I'll go with Nick Chubb coming back. I think I'll go with Harrison Bryant.
I think you can. I want to go with Rashard Higgins, but I think the key here is what they think about Kadarius Hodge. You know, we don't know what the role is going to be for him and whether or not Higgins played himself into some sort of better role than he's had because of the Bengals game. Kadarius Hodge seems to understand that in order for him to be on the field, he needs to block. He even tweeted that earlier this year. So I get the feeling they want to keep him in that kind of role, and maybe Higgins is the one who steps into to Odell's spot. So I would say Higgins over this. I think whoever becomes that number 2, quote unquote, number 2 guy behind Landry, as far as receivers go, is going to have more catches than Austin Hooper.
And you know what, you guys, and let me know if you see it this way too, in the same way that I think Baker was kind of trying to find his chemistry with Odell, I still feel like he's going through that with Austin Hooper, you know, and I think it could possibly be a function of, once again, not having OTAs, not having preseason games, and trying to play catch up and not really kind of knowing each other yet. So I think, you know, I would probably go with Rashard Higgins here just because of the natural chemistry. And I think that Baker knows that a lot is at stake in these 9 games. And I think he's going to go to the place where he is, you know, feels really comfortable a lot of the times. You know, if he has a choice between a little bit of, you know, being uncomfortable or more comfortable, I think he's going to go with the guy that he really likes a lot and knows is just kind of always there for him. Having said that, I think they're going to have to get the tight ends involved a lot more with Odell out. I think we'll see plenty of 2 tight ends. We'll see more 3 tight ends. So it's hard to say because we don't know what defensive coordinators, as you mentioned earlier, Dan, how they're going to play these guys, and that will dictate some of this. But I'm going to go with comfort level, and he's like sort of his like security blanket. Rashard is. I'm going with that.
Yeah, I mean it's. Rashard is probably going to be the answer. I just, you know, we're seeing that connection grow with Harrison Bryant. And the one thing that has really stood out to me is, regardless of sort of what's happened around him, Harrison Bryant has just sort of stayed in the same role. He's clearly a guy they want to have on the field a lot. He's clearly a guy that they want to use a lot in the red zone. And it does seem like, you know, with Baker, it does seem like he has to develop connections with guys. That's just sort of the quarterback he is. He has to develop a trust with a guy. And he doesn't, like you said, Mary Kay, he doesn't have that quite yet with Hooper. He obviously has that with Higgins. I think he's developing it with Harrison Bryant. I think he's got it with Kareem Hunt, but Kareem Hunt's got to stop dropping the football. You know, I think those connections are there, though. So that's going to be that's a good question. A very nice job there from our Football Insider subscriber. Okay, we'll take one more here, and this is just sort of a look ahead to the Raiders, and I'm curious the approach the Browns, and this person wants to know the approach the Browns will take here against Oakland. Do we expect them to attack the Raiders through the air, or will they stay on the ground against Oakland, considering that the Raiders defense is not very good? What do you think we're going to see from the Browns? Because I think what's been fascinating about this season is you kind of don't always know game to game how they're going to attack a team. You know, against Indianapolis, they come out and they throw 28 times in the first half. Against Dallas, they rush for 300 yards. I think it says a lot about this coaching staff that they kind of look at these matchups and say, this is how we want to attack them. How do you think they attack Oakland this week? I think they will throw the ball. I mean, Oakland doesn't create a lot of pressure. They don't create a lot of turnovers, but you can run the ball against them. We know Kareem Hunt, like I said, is a little bit banged up. So I think we might see a little bit of that short passing game come back this week.
I think balanced. I envision a balanced attack. I think that, you know, we saw they spread the ball around a lot against, you know, not a great defense against Cincinnati. And like you said, if there's not a lot of pressure, then Baker does a nice job in those situations where he has time to throw and he doesn't have somebody right in his face and he can get a little bit confident that way. So I think there will be opportunities to throw the ball, and they're going to need to throw the ball because the Raiders can score. Derek Carr can get hot, and you know, they can score some points. So I think it will be balanced. I think the other thing to consider too, real quick, is that Kareem is still suffering from a rib injury himself. And, you know, that's kind of significant when you're trying to catch the ball, run the ball, run as fast as you possibly can. So I still think that, that he needs the bye week until he can feel really good about, you know, just plowing right through there.
Also, I know I think I said Oakland again. I'll put a dollar in the jar.
Put a dollar in the pot. Yeah, I would expect the Browns to come out and just try to execute the game plan that we've come to know them by. They're going to try to run it, and we don't know if Wyatt Teller is going to be out there or not. I think Stefanski said he hasn't officially ruled him out yet, but you know, if they do have Wyatt Teller, and I think it's business as usual, and you know that you can pass on the Raiders, it's really a lot like going against Dallas. I mean, I fully expect this game to be, you know, the over-under to be like in the high 60s. Like, there's going to be a lot of scoring in this game. And but I would expect the Browns to come out and try to do what they really want to do and what we've seen them do in all their wins, and try to establish their running game and show they can do that. And while knowing that they should be able to pass on the Raiders.
Yeah, I think we're in for a lot of points. Both of these defenses are pretty low ranked on the DVOA rankings that came out today, and they're both very low ranked against the pass. The Browns are 25th against the pass in DVOA. Las Vegas is 29th against the pass. The one thing that might change that approach for the Browns is we know Kevin Stefanski really values possession and controlling possession. So maybe he comes out and does run the ball a little bit and kind of tries to control the clock a little bit and keep the ball out of Derek Carr's hands and the Raiders offense's hands. But expect a lot of points at First Energy Stadium on Sunday. It should be another shootout, probably a pretty fun game. I'm excited for this one because this is a chance to sort of see the Browns go up against a team that really is kind of, you know, in that just mess of teams fighting for those last two playoff spots. So this is a really important kind of early season game here. All right. Terry Pluto's coming up after the break. Scott and Mary Kay, thanks for the time. And now we welcome on Terry Pluto. Terry, how are you today?
I'm well, Dan.
Okay, well, the Browns winners on Sunday, 37-34. Let's just start with Odell Beckham. You know, we'll talk a little
bit about that. I don't want to start with that.
You don't want to start with that?
We will. Here's why.
Okay,
that's fair. I was thinking about something. I've gotten a couple fans that are not happy about the Browns winning, and because the Bengals aren't a good team or whatever. And I don't follow this. What was the spot on that game?
3.5.
So if you bet the Browns, you lost?
Browns were favored by 3.5.
So if you bet the Browns, you lost?
Yes, because of the missed extra points.
Ah, that I really think is what is behind all that. We could now go on to the next, but is this one? I just got finished reading a couple of these going, excuse me, what's going on? And then I was thinking, wasn't the spot like 3 or something? So, because I don't bet these things, don't pay attention. Now we can do Odell Beckham. But I just want, so by the way, if you're unhappy out there because you bet the wrong team, that's on you.
Well, I believe Joe Burrow has covered every game so far.
Ooh.
I think. I that might still be the stat. It certainly holds up if it did. You know what, though?
Yes.
You've changed my mind. I do want to start someplace else because I think you bring up something really interesting, and that is well, it's just the Bengals, right?
Yes.
And on one hand, okay, I get that. It is just the Bengals, and their defense stinks and whatever else, and they've only won one game. But at the same time, the Browns needed to win this game, and they needed that performance from Baker Mayfield, and I think you'll take whatever you can get at this point and go from there, especially after that Steelers game.
Browns fans are not entitled to have an elitist or arrogance attitude about their team beating losing teams because they used to lose to those teams. And, I mean, it's a very basic concept. The way you go from bad to good is you begin to beat the other bad teams. I mean, you don't go from not having had a winning season since when, Dan?
2007.
To the Super Bowl in 2020. You just don't. And remember, we're not talking about teams that some of those teams get stuck in 8-8, 9-7, 7-9, you know, or they get stuck, you know, they have a 10-6, then they drop back and then they go, this team could not win more than 7 games for 13 years. Okay.
It was hard to get to 7.
Yes. Last year they were 6-10. You know, we keep going back, you know, the 2 years before that 1-31. And then it was people forgetting before Sashi Brown got there, they were a rip roaring 3-13. So with the oldest, or I'm sorry, the highest paid defense in the league that year too, it was sort of a strange thing. The Browns do stuff like that. So my point being, and to yours, yeah, it's just the Bengals. But don't tell me in the past the Browns were a lock to win that game.
Well, let me throw two things here at you. The first is there isn't a professional league that's more reliant on the schedule than the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a schedule like the Browns have this year, you better take advantage of it. The other piece of that is we talk about beating the Bengals going back to that 2007 season. What loss essentially kept the Browns out of the playoffs that year?
That was in Cincinnati. You know, I was at that game. The wind's blowing 9,000 miles an hour. I remember Phil Savage is a friend of mine too. The GM said, well, they're driving up to the park and the bus is rocking in the wind. And Rob Chudzinski, who basically had been a very good offensive coordinator that year, but remember they rolled the arm of Derek Anderson. Right. Well, he comes out and, you know, it's Air Derek and it's the ball is being aired out. It's like, you know, flying over to Kentucky and everywhere else at that game. And you're correct. That cost them a chance to go to the playoffs and many other, we don't have any other stories like that. Cause none of the teams are even good enough to have a game where you blew the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll right
repeat
now,
that. So think about that. Since 1999, they came back. I mean, the only other year they made the playoffs was 2001 and they had a big win at the end of the year over Atlanta to get in. And the rest of the time, there were no discussions of the playoffs, you know, that whole thing, there were none. So I'm not throwing these things out because I have seen in the past how Browns teams, they don't just lose one to one or two bad teams. They lose to like four of them. Who was that guy in Denver that beat the Browns?
Brandon Allen.
Brandon Allen. Yeah, there was a big one. And the Duck. And we could just go down the line with all these different quarterbacks and things where the Browns have lost. So, you know, that's my contention is that, you know, I don't care if it was by 3 points or whatever. They needed to win. And then to your point, Dan, you should kind of flush this out. It was a huge game in many ways.
Well, and, you know, you're 5-2. And that gives you, you know, last year they got off to that just awful start. And the schedule was difficult and everything was a mess. But you had no room for error. You know, so you go to Arizona and you lose and that's basically it. You know, this year you're 5-2. You've got winnable games coming up, but if you trip up against Philly or if Deshaun Watson just goes off and you lose that game, you've got a little room for error now.
And I mean, they could lose Sunday to Derek Carr.
Matters. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we kind of throw out that last game with Vegas because they had everybody with the whole offensive line was quarantined or something, and that. But my point there is, yeah, you started right. They had to get Baker squared away, because I was sitting with you in that press box and watching him that first quarter going, is this guy just going to be, you know, sinking and not going to be able to find him or what?
Right. And I think everyone, if they're being honest, was probably thinking this guy has a cracked rib. He hasn't completed a pass in the quarter. Maybe I need to sit him down just to give this team a chance to breathe until, you know,
yeah, maybe
get him a little healthier.
It was strange. It was like he had a wounded duck for that first pass. It was intercepted. Then he started firing laser beams over everybody's head. And then in the second quarter, he comes out and it's like, you know, it's 2018 at his best, or he's Oklahoma playing Texas Tech or something. I mean, he was having a grand old time, but he wasn't just firing the ball over the place. I mean, you could tell he was going to passes where, I mean, some of the windows might have been a little tight, but they were good choices he was making in the pocket and where to go with the ball. You didn't see it going into double coverage or that kind of stuff.
Right. So Odell Beckham obviously lost for the year. This is going to be a point of discussion, I think, for all week. I think there's going to be people out there that, you know, make the case that maybe Baker has been better without Odell, maybe he forces the ball to Odell too much. I'm in the camp that when you have Odell Beckham on the field, it makes the defense do things that they won't have to do.
The question is, what does the offense do?
Right. It concerns me a little bit that they don't have a real deep threat now. Without Odell Beckham, this is going to be a challenge, I think, for this coaching staff. The scheme is going to matter a lot here.
And the big thing, I do think, the guy they're going to miss is Chubb. See, Chubb was your huge play guy in the backfield. And talk about perfect for Stefanski's system. That was Chubb. And the Chubb hunt thing was something I have never seen in Cleveland. You keep, you know, one guy comes out, the other one comes in. And your client, you know, Kareem Hunt, I think he is playing with some banged up ribs or something too. His burst isn't like normal. So that's a big issue, but this will be interesting to look at the next few games and see. But, you know, as you mentioned about the schedule, just because is Houston not won a game or they won one? I forgot.
They've won one game.
Yeah. Deshaun Watson can beat you. Carson Wentz can beat you with Philadelphia, you know, and here's a key part. Last year, I looked after 8 games, the Browns were 2-6. And if you go into the break at 6-2, what that does, it gives your guys motivation to play hard in those last 8 games. Where for players, and sure, if you should play or not with an injury, hey, we're in a playoff thing. You know, I'm going to go for it. Whereas if not, forget it. I'm not going to practice hard, all that. I just think a good start is imperative in the NFL because it's such a physical lead. It beats these guys up physically and emotionally that come the second half of the season. That's why the Browns for so years were so bad in November and December, because they were the door to the season was closed in the minds of many of the players there.
Well, so, you know, especially for a team that hasn't done it.
Yeah.
But you look at a team like Philadelphia, you know, they're banged up. They're off to a bad start. But this is a team that has gotten hot late in the season and made a run. I don't think it's
going to happen. And they sit there and they go, our division stinks.
Right.
See, exactly. That's a key thing, too. You know, we're the location. It's like a restaurant used to be when we had restaurants that you could go eat. You know, location, location, location. Well, the location of being in their division is like 2 wins. Hey, we're not out of this at all. And so that's why every game for them, you know, will be big. And I anticipate they're going to play well against the Browns. I think Houston will play well. Romeo comes back. I think Houston's going to play well. So they'll have to, jump up. And the fact, we got to accept the fact with this defense, there's not going to be blowouts for the Browns. You know, the Browns are going to keep both teams in the game. The Browns offense is going to keep them in the game. The defense is going to keep the opposing team in the game.
All right, well, this game is a really interesting game coming up because I think Las Vegas is a team that's right. They're kind of in that group of teams with the Browns, you know, kind of below the top tier of the AFC, fighting for those last 2 playoff spots. I think we're in for another shootout. I actually, just before I came on with you, I finished watching the Bucs-Raiders game.
Tell me about it because I was curious. I just saw the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, their defense is not very good. They don't force a lot of turnovers. They don't get a lot of pressure. I mean, they're better than Cincinnati, but they don't do a lot on that defensive side. But on the other side, they don't turn the ball over a lot. They have fumbled. Mm-hmm. You know, their giveaways have been mostly fumbles, but Derek Carr is not going to throw the ball to you very often. His one interception in that game was off the hands of one of his receivers. I think he's thrown two all year. So, yeah. You know, this could be another kind of shootout type game, because I think the Raiders can probably do some things offensively that'll give the Browns some trouble. And, you know, Derek Carr gets rid of the ball quick. He's accurate, not a ton downfield, but they do have some speed. It'll be an interesting game, I think.
Dan, name a team the Browns have played whose offense didn't create big problems for the Browns defense. Maybe Washington. But even they put up.
Even Washington had the lead.
But they put up 20 points.
Yeah. The defense is certainly an issue. And I think that's the most concerning thing coming out of the Bengals game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they just could not stop. Now, if Terrence Mitchell makes that interception, maybe it's a slightly different story.
Right.
But still, even with that.
That was right in front of us. That fourth down play there on the goal line. You know, remember that right towards the end of the fourth quarter? Because of where we were situated in the press box, that's right in front of us. And I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking, they haven't made a defensive stand all year. They've made key turnovers. They've created key turnovers. But just the fourth, wasn't it a fourth and one or whatever it was? You know, just stop somebody. No.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the issue in this. I don't know if the Raiders are going to give you a bunch of turnover opportunities here.
Yes.
So I think that's part of what makes it interesting, because this is sort of a boom or bust defense right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now I would take Joe Burrow over Derek Carr, but Derek Carr's a good quarterback. He's going to complete passes and he's going to move the team.
They have more of a system. It seems like with Burrow, they're just playing backyard ball. You know, he was averaging 41 passes a game going into that game. I forgot how many he threw against the Browns. They throw almost 50 or something. It's just, and they're running this guy. You know, remember I was starting to go crazy. Why are they having this guy sneak the ball? You're 6'4" quarterback. You just get his legs taken right out from under him. So I don't know exactly what kind of offense they thought they were running other than riding Burrow. Now you're going to see something pretty systematic. I'm assuming, did it look like that when you were watching,
I
started to say Oakland, but Las Vegas.
I know. I'm going to do that all week. Yeah, I mean, you can see that they have a system. They have things they want to do. I mean, look, the Bengals didn't have Joe Mixon on Sunday. They lost their left tackle. They lost their center in that game. I mean, they are kind of just cobbling things together and just riding Joe Burrow's arm right now. But the Raiders definitely
That's the NFL. They always say that is the NFL. You know, the one guy you don't want to lose is your quarterback. You lose your quarterback, you're in huge trouble. Receivers, running backs, linemen, about every other team is going to deal with that. I mean, right now, so the Browns have been without Chubb. Now they're without Odell. They played a couple of games without Conklin, and then a couple of games, at least one game without Conklin. Now it's what, two or three without Teller.
Yeah.
And then you look at on defense, some guys we've never even seen, like Greedy Williams and Delpit. So I don't know what to make of that. And so it's that's how it is. You know, the really good team, they always say next man up, and but that is the sense of the league, and that's why you're supposed to, the wise front offices construct their rosters so that there's going to be a drop off where the guy would be starting, but it isn't like this guy is just hopeless out there when you put him in.
Now I'm curious, is there a situation where you would make a move to bring in a wide receiver, a trade for a wide receiver?
Only a younger guy, somebody like that. I wouldn't go for some big name. I just wouldn't. I want to see what they've got with these guys. I think his name is Moffitt. Isn't he an undrafted receiver that they have on the practice squad or somewhere?
Moffitt is the safety, I believe.
Okay. We'll have to look him up as we're talking. In fact, go and do that. It's a guy they gave like $60,000 to bring him in as an undrafted free agent. He's more of a possession receiver. And I forgot what school he went to. It was one of the like Louisiana Lafayette or Liberty or somewhere like that. Do you see him there?
I know Moffitt is a safety that they called up in the practice squad. I'm looking at receivers. They have Jamarcus Bradley is who you're thinking of.
Yes, that's who it is.
From Louisiana Lafayette, 6'4".
That was the guy. Yeah, excuse me on Moffitt, but that's the guy. They liked him. And so we may see somebody like that come up. I mean, look, Donovan Peoples made some plays. I have to admit, I don't want to go back to they brought in, you know, superstar receiver and how many times is he getting the ball? I don't want to hear that anymore. I don't want to hear it. I'm tired of it. I want to see how the ball is moved around to everybody. And the nice thing, you know, probably my favorite player on the Browns after Rashard, I really do like Jarvis too, because, you know, he is more of a high profile player, but you don't hear him complaining or even that aura around him. You got to get Jarvis the ball. You got to get Jarvis the ball. I mean, that's not, I think he went off in the sidelines once last year, but that was, everybody was going off in the sidelines.
But that's sort of who Jarvis. Jarvis is a competitive guy. He gets fiery. Yeah. You know, back in the days when we used to be allowed to go in the locker rooms after games, you know, you could always tell, like, you wouldn't even need to have watched the game. Just Jarvis in the locker room and you'd have known if they won or lost. He's just that kind of guy. There's just certain guys like that.
One person.
But what I like about Jarvis, and I said this on yesterday's pod, what I like about him is this is a guy that came here, you know, got paid big money.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you couldn't tell if you watch him play.
No.
He still plays like a guy that hasn't gotten paid yet. Still plays like a guy that's kind of fighting for every cent out there.
I mean, he's got his cash. He broke a rib. He should have said, I need a week off.
Right.
I mean, I broke a rib, and man, for 3 or 4 weeks, it was miserable. It really was. And it does. I mean, it goes, there's nothing much they could do about it, but you don't feel like even moving. So yeah, you're right. He plays that way.
You can't do.
But on his stuff on the sidelines, Dan, I was somebody I know who knows him well, and they said what you do with Jarvis is like once in a while, you know, the volcano erupts. You listen to him. I gotta get in, you know, and then that. Okay, Jarvis, are you okay now? And then he goes and sits down, and he's back up in a minute. I'm ready to go. You know, in other words, there's no lingering impact to this. It's just the emotion coming out. And he wants to play every down.
And he'll do block. Anything. He'll carry he'll the block. Ball.
He'll do whatever.
I mean, the guy's got a broken rib, and he's carrying the football.
Yeah, I mean, the old smart, tough, accountable that they want. Well, that's him. That's the guy they want, and I know that is the personality they want for this team, and also, you know, back there is like no diva is kind of it too. And I have to admit, I just couldn't buy an Odell. I struggled with it the whole time, you know that. And I thought there was just too much extra stuff that wasn't worth, even though he was very talented. Now watch Odell get better from his knee and go somewhere else and maybe be terrific. Although, boy, what a tough injury for a receiver, ACL.
I know. And this is a guy that has had some injury issues kind of starting to pile up back to the Giants. I mean, the one thing about Odell is it seems like this guy's a good teammate. He's reliable. You know, you put up with some antics, you put up with with some things on the sideline. But again, too, I do think you lose something when you have a guy that, or you had a guy that you could give the football to on a busted end around and he turns it into a 50-yard touchdown.
I agree.
Definitely are going to at some point this season. It might not be this week. It might not be for a few weeks. At some point this season, you're going to miss Odell Beckham.
Yeah, you will. And then what we will not be able to measure is what were the benefits of when Baker was just playing and not worrying about getting the ball to Odell. See, that's hard to measure. I mean, in the end, it's scoreboard. Did you win? Did you lose? I mean, that's really the – you want to put together a team that basically scores more points than the other. This sounds very elementary, but it's not fantasy ball. See, a lot of times we're wired for fantasy. It was like the reason I kept saying we patience needed with Baker, and I would drop into the Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo thing. Like, those guys are not loved by the fantasy people, but all their teams do is win a ton of games. Will they win a Super Bowl? I don't know, but they got two teams there, and they're running similar offenses. I watched some of the game last night with the Rams, and that looks, that some of that stuff looked real familiar to me, you know, on what Kevin is running. And fine, so set your quarterback up so it isn't all on his shoulders. All right, the Browns were kept saying they needed a game or Baker had to go win it. He won it. So we're past that one. And that should be good for him too.
That actually is an interesting comparison because the Rams do it. I mean, they do it a little differently than the Browns, but there is a lot of, you know, a lot of the motion, the rollouts, trying to create easy throws. They just do it with kind of quicker, smaller guys than the Browns do it. But yeah, I mean, look, the thing about it is if you have your, this is the decision you always have to make with Baker. You know, maybe he's not going to be, you know, that superstar number one pick quarterback. But at the same time, if you have a guy that you can trust that you can send out there every week and he's reliable and he's tough and he can win a game for you every now and again, like he did on Sunday, that's a good thing too.
And he is, like you said, I think tough and durable. This guy's not missed a start since he took over. And a lot of quarterbacks, you know, we'll see how they're letting Joe Burrow get beat up, you know, how long that lasts and some of these others. So I think that's for him. But the main thing is the Rams have been running that stuff for, I don't know, 3 years now or whatever it is that Sean's been there. I still think that Stefanski's, like, say the playbook, you know, think of a 300-page book. They're like on page 88.
Right.
Of going through and learning what this offense can do in that. So that's why I'm very encouraged. The defense scares me to death. That ball went in the end zone. I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, at the end of the game, the Hail Mary. By the way, I've gotten some emails on that. What did you think? Did the defense mess up on that?
It sounds like, I mean, this is what, I don't know if you heard what Kevin said on Monday, but he said that, I guess they weren't sure that Burrow could get the ball into the end zone. So they were sort of playing for, they didn't rush. They were kind of playing for a bunch of laterals.
Yes.
And so then that's what Cincinnati comes out and throws the Hail Mary and Shelton Breadwine is in the right place at the right time, right in front of AJ.
Otherwise than that.
Or we might be having a very different discussion.
Well, I saw there was a game and I was at the game by the end zone. Because this is back in the old days when Chris Palmer was coaching and playing in Pittsburgh. And you have to go down the field at the end to get into the locker room. So the Browns are losing. I forgot what it was. But last play of the game, Tim Couch fires some long leaping thing into the end zone. Forgot who caught it. Might have been Kevin Johnson or somebody catches it. Remember, this is like either 99 or 2000.
Tim Couch had a couple of those, I thought.
Yeah. But anyway, so they win on this you know, this long thing. Dwight Clark was the GM back then. He's running around. He's hugging writers and kissing them. I got kissed on the top of my bald head by Dwight Clark. And, you know, he's grabbing. But it was one of those, but it looked the same thing. I'm sitting there going, I flash back to that. Not the kiss, but I just thought of it as we're talking. But the, you know, the ball in the air, and it feels like it's up there forever, and everybody's hovering around. You're thinking, this is a 50-50 shot at where this thing ends up. But I wondered the same thing too. There was zero rush, so they were worried about the laterals.
Right. I think they underestimated Joe Burrow's arm a little bit.
Yeah. He hasn't
done a ton getting the ball down the field necessarily. But you know, I am curious though. I know that we're talking Browns, but I do want to know what you think of Burrow.
You've seen him tremendous. Twice now.
Yeah.
I think he's the next great thing coming if they don't get him killed.
Yeah.
I mean, really, and that's a big issue. Not that Tim Couch had all the abilities of Joe Burrow, but he was a tall guy and pretty good athlete. And I've known Couch for quite a while and talked, and he says, I mean, think by the time Tim Couch got to be 26 years old, he's done. He had shoulder and knee and neck and back and surgeries and stuff we didn't even know about because of all the beating he took. And you can't let a franchise guy do that. And, you know, I think he would have been sacked 24, even sacked 24 times going into that game with the Browns. And they got him a couple times and got him hard too. It isn't like a lot of times this guy, the sacks come and they sort of duck under it or whatever. Right. They've got to protect him. But otherwise, shoot, his vision and all the stuff they say about him, it's true. I mean, he just seems to know what he wants to do back.
Yeah, I mean, I just keep going back to that throw he made after he took the sack at the end of the first half. And then he, it was the very next play. He just fires a ball into traffic to, I think it was Tyler Boyd for a touchdown. I mean, that's the kind of situational throw that, you know, just so much about that throw was like, wow, this guy's got something.
I mean, right now it's four. You look at, and then you have, you got four fascinating quarterbacks. They're all different in the, in the North, but at least now, I mean, I think we all could have a sigh of relief about Baker that we weren't going to watch him turn into, you know, I don't know who, I don't know where that was going. And because it went on for two quarters and against Indianapolis and three quarters of Pittsburgh before he got pulled and one quarter in Cincinnati. So that was alarming. And before that, he had thrown 9 touchdown passes compared to 2 interceptions in like the first 18 quarters. And like that guy disappeared. This guy who was lost showed up, and then that guy disappeared, and both of those, and suddenly we had Baker of 2018. So this will be good to see. And, you know, we saw also that the offensive line got his act back together. Can you imagine what that practice probably was like on Wednesday, where remember Callahan talked about he had a pad practice because he did not like how they blocked in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm sure it was not a particularly fun week. But, you know, again, going back to how we started this thing, you're supposed to beat the Bengals. You beat the Bengals. Yeah. If you're a team that wants to make the playoffs and you're facing a one-win team to get right, the Browns got right against them. That's what you do. And now we'll kind of see what happens here over the next month or so. The playoff chase really starts after Thanksgiving. So what they can do here over the next few weeks is kind of set this thing up, try and get healthy over the bye week. And then you make your run, starting with probably that Tennessee game in December.
It's probably, if you think, I'm not sure on Chubb, but apparently it's not awful. So you don't play him this week. You rest him through the bye week. And then you take a look and see where he's at. And even if you take another week after that, you still haven't looked for the last 7 games.
Yeah.
And just the fact, look, every time you fake the ball to Nick Chubb, you want to talk about defensive coordinators staying up at night. That guy does, because they talked about the home run hitter as a receiver. That's true, but he is a home run hitter as a running back, because all of a sudden, you know, he's in a pack of guys and then he's just out and nobody can catch him.
Well, once he gets to the second level, you're in trouble.
Now we'll have to see how he is with the knee, because knees are always a concern. What do you think of Peoples Jones? I mean, he had a great coming out party, but I had no opinion of him.
I mean, I'm intrigued. I've been disappointed with him as a returner. He looks sluggish as a returner. Like I haven't seen that speed.
I was told by somebody, as they say, on the inside, that with Peoples Jones, what they've been stressing to him is possession, catch it, run it, don't fumble it. And they think that might be part of the reason that he maybe looks a little timid. But at this point, and I guess he only did punts in college, I believe. I think he did.
He might have had like a kickoff return or two in college. But it was
But really, they've been just do the same. What did Stefanski call him, like Mr. Reliable or something?
Yeah.
That was interesting for a rookie.
I think it's a credit to the coaching staff that you've had, you know, Rashard Higgins, who was inactive, Donovan Peoples-Jones, who was inactive. Mm-hmm. You've had guys, you know, I mean, David Njoku makes a huge touchdown catch, right? I mean, you have guys that, you know, by all accounts, some of them could get really, you know, they could complain, they could get bitter that they aren't on the field. And then, but when their number's been called, they've stepped up and made plays.
You know how the receivers unprompted mention O'Shea, the receiving coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been an offensive coordinator before, and he's got a Belichick background too. And so that could have something to do. That's the other thing this person mentioned to me about, like, Peoples, right? I said that, is that he is very good at you know, how the Patriots prepare their guys to play. And he's brought a lot of that to here. Now, Adam Henry, the receivers coach that was here, was also considered to be very good too, but it just seems like last year, I don't care if you're a good coach or bad coach, everything was chaotic. So it's almost like an asterisk to anybody next to anybody else's name besides Freddie's.
It's pretty incredible how different things feel under this staff, for sure.
It's just like they still have had, I don't know, maybe there's been once or twice this year where we've seen Baker go the line, have to call a timeout because something was messed up. I mean, that was like every game. And the legal motion and all that garbage, it's gone.
And I try not to read too much into some of this stuff. You know, those videos teams will put out on their social accounts, the post-game speeches and things like that. But if you get a chance, if you haven't, the Browns put out what Stefanski said in the locker room after the game. And I thought it was really interesting. His focus was on, you know, enjoy this one. But he mentioned the Raiders two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had this team looking forward already in the moments after that game. And I think, you know, again, sometimes you can read too much into that stuff, but, you know, you can pick up little things and just his focus on getting to the next game and getting this team, you know, not thinking about the bye just yet, but like focus on this week. And then I think he said he'll take care of them at the bye week if they do that. But kind of keeping that focus moving forward.
They've been able to do that because that was a big thing Andrew Berry wanted to get rid of was the when you lose in Pittsburgh, then you lose at Cincinnati the next week. You lose two games on one afternoon. And that means because your mindset is not ready to go after that. And twice now, Stefanski's been able to get these guys back together. And at that point, you know, unless you're betting the game, Dan, I mean, otherwise, you just want the Browns to win, whether it's by one or whatever, so that you don't have that, man, we got hammered by Pittsburgh and then we blew it at the end of the Bengals. That's what you don't want because that spirals you downward. Now it's like, okay, we got past the Bengals, 5-2, Vegas, bring them on.
Yep.
But don't bet this game. Stop.
All right, Terry, I think I've probably kept you here long enough. Everyone, make sure you're subscribed to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast feed wherever you listen to your podcasts and head over to cleveland.com/Browns. And click that blue banner at the top of the page to check out Football Insider and get yourself subscribed. Terry, thanks for the time.
Thanks a lot, Dan.